does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. Perfectly fitting to play this song as an intro for our next guest, Eddie Garrison. Do you know why it's perfectly fitting?
Because he's going to the Paradise City, which is Phoenix, this weekend.
that's
I think he is, at least.
Within the target of a decent thing, right? But that song, of course, is performed by Axl Rose. And Axl Rose was born in 1962 and lived in West Lafayette, Indiana, which is exactly where, just a few years after that, our next guest arrived in 1966, as a matter of fact. Arrived to play for the Purdue Boilermakers, helping them, along with who we talked to yesterday and Rick Mount, to the 1969 Final Four. We're talking about Billy Keller, whose roots run through Purdue basketball in multiple ways regarding Final Fours. Coaching standpoint as well, but he joins us now. Billy, how are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the show with you.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on, and I want to begin with simply this. Just your thoughts, I guess, your excitement level, your thoughts on this very fun run that we can say is a run for Purdue right now to the Final Four, but let's be real, even with some of the disappointments, has been like a 2 to 3 year run, kind of the culmination of that under Matt Painter.
Well, you can tell that these guys have a chip on their shoulder because of what's happened to them the last 3 years. So I think they're excited. I know I'm excited. I don't think I've missed one of their games on TV at all. Of course, I'm down here in St. Pete, Florida. I was able to go see them play in person against Minnesota when I was home at Christmas time. But this team is really, really exciting to watch. And, of course, with Edie and Smith and those guys, it's really been a pleasure to watch them.
Billy, we've been asking a lot of former Purdue players this question, and obviously you felt the elation of being a part of a Final Four and going to a national championship game, so I know it's a little different from your perspective, but for the Purdue old guard, what does it mean to see this team make this run, and ultimately what would it mean to see them hoist the thing on Monday night?
Well, like I said, it would be so exciting, and I think it's a dream come true, really, for Purdue Nation. You know, we have been expecting big things over the last few years and didn't get it. And I think that's why these guys now have a chip on their shoulder and they are determined to get this done. Now, whether it happens or not, you never know because you have to play the games. But I'm so excited to watch them play because they are playing. Really, I think Purdue plays a different type of game than what Rick and I had the opportunity to play. Our offense was geared more towards Rick, and the team now, that's the present team, is now gearing their game towards Edie. And so it's a inside-outside situation, but I think they've got a great shot at winning this thing. And I think Purdue Nation has been waiting for a long time, keeping their fingers crossed. And I think that's why it's so exciting because of the fact that we had the opportunity and it slipped away. So we'll see what happens.
Billy, to me, and I want your perspective because, you know, you've played, you've coached, you've been around the game in multiple levels in about every area that you can, from high school to the professional ranks. So you can probably read basketball body language, right? And for me, when the horn sounded against Tennessee, I read the basketball body language of Matt Painter and Zach Edey. And what I saw was this, Billy Keller. I saw two guys that went, whew, now back to work. That's how it looked to me. Like they were well aware that there's still work to be done. What was your interpretation?
Well, I believe that was the same thing, and I do believe that the very first game of the tournament, I think I saw that sigh of relief at that time as well. It's no surprise that those guys would feel that way because the fact that Tennessee played them so well in the first meeting, because I think Purdue won that game by 7 maybe. So Purdue knew that they were in for a game and a battle, and only beating a team by six or seven the first time, you knew that you were going to be in a game. And so there had to be a sigh of relief when that horn blew, and you could tell, I believe, that Fletcher was the guy that when the game was over, he threw the ball pretty high in the air with excitement. And I know that those guys were excited about not only beating Tennessee, but also having the opportunity to go to the Final Four.
Purdue great Billy Keller is our guest, as well as Pacers legend Billy Keller is our guest. And I want to shift towards those waters for a bit, Billy. You win three ABA championships in 70, 72, and 73. You obviously played with Rick Mount during that time, but also played alongside George McGinnis. What can you tell me about your relationship with George and just those ABA fun-filled Pacers teams?
Well, George and I became friends really during the summertime because I was 4 years ahead of him at Washington High School, so we never had the opportunity to play. But I was working for a Baker Forms construction company. My summertime job that Purdue had gotten for me, and George worked for as a laborer. His dad was a labor foreman, and George was working for his dad and that company. And so we had a chance to get together a couple of summers, actually three summers that I was working. So I got to know George pretty well at that point. And what a great guy George was. I mean, he never met a stranger. He was always gracious and friendly to people. He always spent time with people that may want an autograph. And it was just a wonderful person. Not only was he a great basketball player, but he was a good person. And he really became an important part of the Indianapolis area after his playing days. So I'll tell you, I was so disappointed to hear that George had passed, and I had tried to keep up through Jeannie Brown. You know, any time something had happened, Jeannie Brown would call me, and any time I saw Jeannie Brown come across my phone, I thought, oh no, somebody has passed. And so I kept pretty close tabs on George, so I knew that phone call was probably going to be George. But so disappointing that he basically died by himself. You know, I don't know. I think they had to bring him back two or three different times, but you know, what a wonderful guy. And he's the same kind of guy on the basketball court, friendly, except to the opponents. And, I would rather be on George's side, in a ball game than against him, because he was a real baller. But again, a great guy, great player. And, he just loved to play.
And Jeannie Brown, the wife of Roger Brown, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, so I wanted to clarify that for folks who, you know, and I know it's still a very close-knit group, right? Those that were part of the ABA with the Pacers. And, of course, one of the guys that played in the ABA with the Pacers had played with you at Purdue. So let's go back to 1969 in the Final Four with Rick Mount, who we talked to yesterday. Billy, what are your recollections when you look back on that run that you guys made?
Well, I'll tell you what, we really had a good team. And I do believe that had we not been banged up, I believe that we would have been more competitive. Whether we would have won or not, I don't know. But we didn't play our best game. And when I say that we were banged up, Herman Gilliam was just coming back from an injury. And he was one of our major players. Chuck Bavis did not play, who was our seven-footer, you know. And Rick didn't have his best game in the first half of that. And so we were down by 12 going into the halftime. But they ended up beating us by 20. But being banged up is not an excuse. We were playing against the best basketball team that had ever been assembled at that time, with Johnny Wooden being the coach and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being their focal point. And UCLA, we had played them three times that year. We played them in the dedication game at Mackey Arena. They beat us on last second shot by 2 points. They also then beat us by 12 at the Poly Pavilion out in California, my senior year in the beginning, and then They beat us by 20 in the finals. So whenever a team beats you three times, they're probably a better team. But I'll tell you, the guy that we missed the most in that game against UCLA in the finals was Chuck Bavis. Chuck Bavis was 7 feet, probably 230, 235. He really could body up Kareem, keep him away from the boards. And he did really a nice job on him the first two times that we played. But since we didn't have him, we substituted with Jerry Johnson and Frank Kaufman. Those guys, if you mold them into one, they still wouldn't have been 235 pounds and
right.
7 feet tall. You know, but they did the best that they could. But Kareem basically just kind of controlled that game. And like I say, we were banged up. And but again, they were really, really good with Kareem. And I remember we like to fast break. They like to press in that first game, in the dedication game. Kareem was shooting a free throw. And my job was to line up right behind on the circle, right behind the free throw shooter. Well, I'm just trying to give you some idea of how dominant Kareem was at that time. But when the shot went up, I could not see the basket standing right behind him. I mean, he just seemed to be such a giant in the game. So having the opportunity to get beat on a last-second shot against a Kareem team and then lose by 12 and then be injured for the most part with a lot of our guys end up playing against the best creates a lot of positive memories for me.
Yeah. Bavis, you know, had gotten hurt in the regionals, right? Didn't Bavis have like a chest or abdominal issue that took place during the regional?
Yeah, I think it was a shoulder.
Okay.
But that I could be wrong on that. But I know we didn't have him, and I know that we really missed him because we didn't have anybody that could replace him in the middle to guard against Kareem.
Billy Keller is our guest, talking about Purdue in the Final Four. Of course, the Boilers in 1969, then again in 1980, in the Final Four, the 80 Final Four, Market Square Arena, Iowa, UCLA, Louisville, and Purdue. And the Boilers led by Lee Rose and his trusty assistant, who was Billy Keller. Billy, that run, and I was a kid, but let me tell you the things that I've heard and read about Purdue's 1980 Final Four run, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to dispel it or verify it, okay? But what I'd always heard is that clearly Joe Barry Carroll was an unbelievable talent. He was the number one pick in the draft, and his play was a big part for Purdue's Final Four run. But Lee Rose leaving after the end of the year, and maybe some of the chatter of that, along with just players kind of all not being on the same page. It was a great run, but it was one that didn't have total cohesiveness throughout the season for its roster. Is that an accurate statement?
I believe so. I believe there was a lot of turmoil starting out with George King and Lee Rose. They never really saw eye to eye. You might even say that there was not a lot of love there between the two, which I think created some turmoil. Then also you had some players that were not happy because they weren't getting playing time and because the focus was on Joe Barry. And Joe Barry was kind of the guy that he was a guy that needed to know. He needed to know what was going on, and Lee really cater to him because he was the best player. He was going to get us into the finals. He was going to get us where we were going to end up going. And I think guys kind of resented that a little bit. You had different personalities on that team. And to be honest with you, the team itself, and I give credit to Lee because he was able to kind of coach those guys that were not all on the same page. And to do as well as we did, I think to some extent was kind of a surprise to me, because usually if you're going to win and you're going to win big, you got to have guys that are on the same page. You got to have guys that bond together, that really like each other. And I'm not sure that we really had that. So getting as far as we did with the challenges that we had, it ended up being a really pretty good season.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Did you have it in 69 in terms of that camaraderie and chemistry? And if so, did it make it difficult from a coaching standpoint to kind of understand the players' perspectives when you didn't have it?
Well, yeah, I think it helped because in 69 we had a very close-knit group. Everybody played their role. And I'll tell you, George King was a master at getting guys to understand their roles and to
And by the way, Billy, for those unfamiliar, George King was your coach in 69. He was the athletic director by 80, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
But I was talking about the 69 team when he was the head coach. And he was a master at getting guys to recognize what their abilities were, what their contributions needed to be, what role they were going to play. Because obviously Rick was the shooter. And Rick was a great shooter. There's no question about it. But I think also Herman Gilliam came in from North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and he was an excellent player. And I think George was constantly maybe talking to Herman to try to keep Herman on the same page. As I mentioned earlier, our team in 69, we were focused more on Rick. And, Rick was the guy that was going to take us. But I do believe that there were a lot of guys on that team that could have done more in the way of contributions, but in order for us to be successful in George's eyes, he wanted everybody to kind of cater to the game plan, which was Rick to be the shooter. If I were going to score, Herman was going to score, we were going to do that off of the offense that might be the secondary or on fast breaks or free throws. So I think there was a little bit of friction there, but like I say, George was a master at getting guys to understand their role and to play their role. It's just so unfortunate that we were banged up at the end because I feel like we would have been so much more competitive than what we were.
This particular group, Billy, kind of feels like a hybrid of those two teams because you've got a dominant big man like you had in 80. But you have the chemistry and everybody understanding their role of this group. That's the thing I think that Matt Painter has masterfully done is one through, the equipment manager. Everybody knows their role. What is Purdue going to have to do to get these final two wins and bring back a title?
Well, I think what they have to do is they have to continue to focus on what they're doing. And they can't focus. Their focus cannot be in the second game. It can't be focusing on UConn, assuming that they're going to win. They got to really focus on the task at hand, and that's North Carolina State. If you overlook somebody, that always is a problem for teams. I think when we beat North Carolina in the semifinal round, I think, in 69, I think they overlooked us because I think they were overlooking us thinking they were going to get into the final game against UCLA. And I do believe that's one of the reasons why we had so much success against them. So with this team, and I love Matt Painter's demeanor with the players. He's always calm, seems like to me. He's always calm and collected. He's always coaching players when they come off the floor. I think these players are not only playing for themselves, but they're playing for Matt Painter, and I think they're also playing for the Purdue fans. And I think that's what they've got to do. They just got to continue to do what they've been doing. And I heard in an interview from Lance Jones, and he was saying, this team doesn't get too high and they don't get too low. They kind of celebrate the moment. So when they beat Tennessee, they were celebrating in the moment, but he said we had the day off right after that particular game when they got home, and then the next day they were back in the gym working. And I think this is an emotional team that's also a business team, and that's what he was saying. They don't get too high, they don't get too low. They're just going to go out and play. One thing I was thinking about too, Jake, is that we didn't have all the media and all of the things going on around the tournament. These guys are constantly having someone put a microphone in front of them or asking them questions, or and it could be a distraction. But I believe that when we played, George King took all of that off of our shoulders, and he took the questions and got in front of the microphone and that kind of thing. But there wasn't nearly as much as there is today. But I think Matt Painter is a master at anything pertaining to his team. He's gonna let some of the players talk, but for the most part, he's gonna keep everybody level-headed and ready to play. And that's the thing that I like about him so much, is that he is a former player, and he can really communicate with his players of what needs to be done. And you can surely bet right now that he's got his team focused on the job at hand of playing against North Carolina State and not focusing on a game beyond that.
Well, Billy, when you do talk radio for a living, and this is literally the only thing I know how to do, but one of the things you try not to do is, like, you know, you want to have a reverence for your guests, right? But you don't want to, like, completely, like, kiss them up and show some sort of non-objectivity. However, you mentioned the media coverage that players have today and how ubiquitous it is. For me, the ubiquitous thing for growing up in Indianapolis was it was difficult as a fan or a player of basketball to not in some way, shape, or form come across a way in which Billy Keller was helping young basketball players, whether it be basketball camp down at UIndy, whether it be shooting clinics coming into a high school, whether it be speaking to schools, speaking to teams. Anywhere that I went, I represent an entire generation of players who benefited from the time and generosity of Billy Keller, the basketball wisdom of Billy Keller, and, of course, being able to enjoy the contributions from the winning standpoint at Washington High School, Purdue, the Pacers, etc., in this area. So I want to speak for a ton of guys and gals in my age group and simply saying not only thanks for your time today, but thanks for your nonstop efforts in bettering the game for those of us that are younger than you in the state of Indiana.
Well, I sure appreciate that. You know, I love remembering as much as I can about the past, and I'm excited about the future for these Boilermakers and also for the fans that are out there. It's just fun to be a part, and it seems like, and I was telling my wife earlier today, I said, you know, when it comes NC2A Final Four or NC2A tournament, it seems like I'm always having the honor of being on the radio shows and TV shows and that kind of thing. So hopefully we're doing something right and have done something right in the past that can help the future.
Well, we appreciate it so much, Billy, and enjoy the games. Enjoy Arizona if you're heading out, and of course, boiler up, right?
Absolutely. Boiler up, and thanks so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Billy Keller, the basketball legend of Indiana, Indianapolis, Washington High School, Purdue, and of course the Pacers, along with a coaching career that touched many places throughout, including University of Indianapolis here in central Indiana.